Hey everyone, welcome into the hours. I am Mark and I'm joined by Tyler. Together we are Savvy Basketball, and this is part two of our Special Situations podcast. And if you took anything away from episode one, my main takeaway was, as coaches, we should have a set philosophy of special situations. We should know if we're in this situation, this is what I would lean to. That way we have something that we can fall back on. We're not making those decisions in the moment. We're not overthinking things. And our players and our staff all have a clear understanding of where our decisions are coming from. And I think as coaches, we always say we're going to do more special situations, yet we don't do more special situations. I've never met a coach that says, oh, we work special situations too much or even enough. And I'm going to challenge coaches to obviously work on them more, but do it in two ways. For special situations, I think for you to internalize your philosophy and truly be prepared, you should test. And first, let's do this. We should test and teach. So first, I would test my philosophy of, all right, I'm in this special situation. These are the things that I have to consider. These are the outcomes that could happen, and really work through those. Because I think as coaches, we're like, oh, okay, tie game, 10 seconds left. Like, we're just going to run a play for Tyler and then we'll win that way. But like, who do you want making that pass? Where are we going? Where do we want Tyler to get the ball at? Do we know where Tyler's the most comfortable with the ball in his hands? So really test yourself and walk through all of those things, because what you're going to do is you're going to battle like the fluency illusion. So picture this, you've read a book, you've heard, maybe you've in our Savvy membership, you've looked at a drill or maybe something Tyler teaches around shooting, and you're like, oh, I got that. You walk out to the court and you're like, oh, wait, was that, how did they set that up? Right? Like, what did Tyler say? Like, why did he use pistols? Okay. So that's like the fluency illusion, where you think you have it until you're in the moment. So make sure you're testing yourself. You're testing yourself, and then make sure you can teach it. So actually teaching it is going to reorganize the way your brain processes it. So if you have to like really teach a special situation to your players and to your coaches of like, this is what we want to do in this situation, and here's why, and here's how we're going to get that done, your thoughts are going to become much, much clearer, right? They always say, teach it if you want to learn something. So coaches, that is the value of actually working those special situations. You might say, well, I've walked through all these special situations in my head. I know what I'm going to do. But unless you test and teach it, you're not going to truly be prepared.
Yeah. If that's your only takeaway from the hours episode today, which is the best way to learn is to teach, you have gotten your value. A quick recap. Last week, we talked about these three special situations, free throws. They happen a lot. How can we actually steal possessions, get a little bit more efficient in them? Baseline out of bounds, both offense and defense. How can we treat these special situations with a little bit more efficiency? And fouling. Not the free throw aspect, but actually committing fouls, when, how, and how to practice it. If you have not watched that one, go back, watch Special Situations Part 1. It is definitely worth your time. Before we dive into Special Situations Part 2, I would invite you to come out and hang out with us. As of recording right now, it's mid-September. Two opportunities I would love to invite you out to. One, we're having our annual Fall Coaches Retreat in Phoenix, Arizona, October 24 through 26. Come and hang out with me and Mark and the team. Get a time of relaxation, some workshops, some fun, some sun. You can check that out on our website, Savvy Coach. And we'll actually link it in the description below as well if you want to come and hang out with us. I think it'd be a great time. You know, bring your significant other. And let's have some fun. Let's learn together and let's play some pickleball. Two, I'm going to be presenting at the Utah Coaches Association the very next weekend, Saturday, November 1st. Firth is a city. November 1st, and just outside of Salt Lake City, Utah. Come hang out. I'm going to be doing an encore and a classroom presentation. And shoot, if you are a coach around the Salt Lake City area, if you'd like me to come in and do a practice audit or work with your team for a session or a day around that Saturday, November 1st, hit me up. Mark, what do you have going on in person? Anything beyond our fall retreat that you would like to make coaches aware of?
Yeah, in the fall, I'll be headed to Vermont to do a program clinic, and then Alaska after that. So I'm I'll be flying over a lot of cities if anybody's interested in me making a pit stop. I love, you mentioned practice audits. I was talking on our live training last night. So once a week we hop on. Actually, we're doing it twice a week. I'm going through our new offensive system, RDS. Tyler's going through his defensive system, lock left. So any members invited to hop on, and somehow program clinics came up, and I was saying how much I love to do the practice audits. And a lot of the program clinics are, you know, you watch us do our thing, but I really enjoy watching coaches do their thing. And then, hey, here's what we could add, subtract, tweak a little bit, just so we get the, you know, the most transfer from practice to game or the most engagement from our players. So that's always just a really fun experience. And the feedback from those has been phenomenal.
Yeah. RDS, you mentioned it. Gosh, we are so pumped up. I guess we're giving you just a little sneak peek. The RDS offensive system, the marriage and newest iteration of race and space and drive in space. Mark and I have been working on it for the better part of a year, actually. It is launching. It is launching within our Savvy Basketball community. Come check it out. We got a 7-day free trial. We're dripping all the layers of the RDS, which I can confidently say, in my opinion, is the best offensive system in the world. It's really fun to see that many of our savvy coaches are already running and referencing RDS because we've been training them in these principles of offensive play for the past year. So come check out RDS. One last thing. If you are in Idaho, I will actually be in Idaho teaching, the very next weekend, November 7 and 8. So if you're in and around Idaho, hit me up as well. Would love to hang out with you. All right. Should we dive into special situations part two?
Let's do it.
All right. Where should we start, Mark?
Let's start with a situation. You know, okay, if you listen to part one, which you should have stopped, and if you didn't, and gone back and listen, we talked about how not all special situations are late game situations. So I do want to get to some late game situations, but let's start with one that is not late game situation that I can guarantee will happen every single game. And that is, I'm going to ask you to go first on this one.
Okay.
Put you on the hot seat here. You can pick pregame, halftime, or postgame situation. Which one would you want to give us some thoughts on?
Let's start with pregame. And are you talking about what our team actually does in pregame on court, or you as a coach, any direction or, you know, verbal coaching you give pregame?
Yes.
All right, beautiful. All right, I'll give you... I do think this is a special situation. If you've been listening to the podcast at all, you'll know that we believe that traditional pregame warmups is one of the most wasted times in all of basketball. So three ideas to make your pregame more special as a special situation. One, treat it like a mini practice. Treat it like a mini practice in that do things that you do at the beginning of your practice that prime your team for performance. Two, do things that your players are going to need to do well on court. So two-line layups is the exact opposite of this. They don't need to practice their wide open 45-degree angle, you know, half-speed, saucy layups. That's not what's going to help you win the game. So do things that are actually help your team win the game. Third, make sure that you engage their minds in game-like reads and competition. If your team starts slow, chances are you didn't do anything in pregame that was at full speed, full competitive engagement. And so they get shocked by that. I would really encourage you to get to a place where it is full competitiveness in pregame, especially if your team starts slow.
I'll go coach part of pregame.
All right.
As we give a lot of advice in Savvy, this is when we give often, talk less. And what I would do if our pregame talk is your pregame, everything that you're force feeding them for the 10 minutes before you got on the court, should have been dripped over your practice time, whether that's 2 days leading in. And another thing at Savvy is we like to have language that is really sticky, where it's short, it's very memorable. So an example of, you know, sticky language would be, you know, nine or no. Maybe we're talking about shot selection. Maybe they got really good rim to, protectors. Maybe they help really good off the wall and take away layups. So your pregame speech, instead of just giving them a dissertation on shot selection, how important it is, I would say, all right, over the last couple of days, we've talked a lot about nine or no, nine being a big advantage layup for those that don't know. and a nine or no would be an easy decision. If you don't have a nine, we're going to either pass or stop or do something else other than force a shot. So if I say nine or no, think about where you are in the court, how that applies to you, and what your job is, right, in that. So now they're going to start to think about, okay, I'm driving off a fingers cut. Help comes from the wall. I'm just going to stop and look for, you know, the pitch to the corner. I'm going to a dump down to my dunker. And they just start to get those mental reps in there. And then you can say stop and share with your teammate, because a dunker might say, well, I'm going to be getting to the cleanup spot and I'm going to have my hands up and I'm going to be ready to catch and square my shoulders to the backboard and finish. And your racker might say, you know, I'm going to drive with my eyes up. I'm going to see the defense and engage too, and all those things. So just make it a little bit more engaging. Again, like Tyler said, if they're not breaking a sweat in their pregame warmups, they're going to be shocked by the actual game. Same thing. We want to break that mental sweat as well, where they're going through the game plan before they even hit the floor.
You know, what I like about what you said there, Mark, is you didn't present them new information in pregame. There was no new information about this team. There was no new information trying to teach them to do something different. You fit it into principles of play that are authentic to your program, nine or no. So it's more of a reminder. And I think that, you know, for any of you that do come and check out RDS, we establish these principles of play in our conceptual offense. And anything that you want to direct your team's attention to, you can always zoom out to the principle of play, nine or no. This team has a great rim protector, so it's going to be harder to get nines than normal. So the moment you know you don't have a nine, what do we do, right? So you're directing them to and reminding them to something that they already know, have already trained, and you build confidence, as opposed to this team has a great rim protector. You should be afraid. You should probably, you know, be really aware of this, which leads to missed layups. No, we prepared you. We've protected you. You know what you do when you don't have a nine. It's going to be good for us. So I really like what you did there.
Thank you. All right. Did you want to go to halftime post game, or you want to move on?
Yes. Real quick. Halftime. As a coach, I would limit yourself to three things maximum. So many times in halftime, especially when things are not going well, you want to give everything, change everything. You know, my mental checklist, I might not even go through all three of these, if not important, is start, stop, keep. All right, what do we need to start doing that we're not doing? What do we need to stop doing that's hurting us? And what do we need to keep doing, maybe even double down on, because it's working really well? Start, stop, keep. And a framework is really valuable for a team. If they know that start, stop, keep is coming, or whatever framework that you do use, then they're going to be able to mentally slot that in and make it actionable. But if you don't always use start, stop, keep, use all these different random approaches to halftime, it's going to be hard for that person to process the information. You know, our brain makes connections. It works in patterns. I think you've all heard this analogy before. A chess master can look at a chessboard, get it covered by, you know, a towel or a blanket or whatever, and then recreate the exact same patterns at any point in the game. But if a chess master sees random pieces on a chessboard in a way that it never actually would happen in an actual game, they can't recreate it. So it's not that they have photographic memory, it's that they've seen the same pattern so much that their brain is able to make connections. It's the same with our players. Try to fit things into patterns that they see a lot, even in how we teach or the language that we use or how we approach pregame or halftime, and they'll be able to retain more information. That's why it's so important to use frameworks as a teacher. Start, stop, keep is a framework that you can use.
Yeah. I'm going to add two things to what you said and just connect them. Routine, so important. Yeah. You know, like anytime our team was out of routine, we practice at a different time or games at a weird time or weird location, you can feel it, right? So the more you can make things routine, like Tyler said, just having that framework. And then what I'll say is like, hey, let's do a start, stop, keep around nine or no. Because if it was so important that we talked about it pregame, we probably should evaluate it at halftime as well. So whatever your keys to winning the game are, or whatever those things you talked about pregame should be what you're evaluating at halftime. So you might say, hey, how are we doing with nine or no? What do we need to start, stop, or keep doing to continue to get more nines or just make better decisions when we don't have nines? I'll go post game right here. Stop having post game talks. Like literally thank them for their effort. Tell them what the next event is, practice tomorrow at this time, and get out of there, because Your 30-second talk is going to turn into a 10-minute talk and no one's listening and nothing's going to stick in the moment. They're emotional. They're tired. The parents in AAU basketball are ready to go home because they just drove 2 hours and sat in a gym for 8 hours and they're ready to get home and get ready for their week. So no more post-game talks. You're going to see your team again. Give yourself time to process it because, as we all know as coaches, usually when you watch the film, you have a very different feeling than what you had in the moment as being an emotional, just right off the end of the game.
Yeah, and to connect to routines, I would suggest that your post-game have a routine as well. So our post-game routine is just this. Celebrations, here's the next thing that's happening schedule-wise, and we're gone. And, you know, that is the routine. So there's not really much of a post-game talk at all. It's just, but the celebration is a part of routine. Players know this, win or loss, we're gonna make somebody's day and recognize their good efforts.
Yeah. All right. You wanna transition and do a little?
Let me ask you this. We're going. So we primarily talk about these three special situations. Special situations are things that happen a lot. Pre-game, halftime, post-game, they happen a lot. And so we wanted to ensure that we talked about it. All right, Mark, you did not watch the Minnesota Lynx and Golden State Valkyries WNBA playoff game last night, correct?
Correct.
All right. Well, then we are going to just ask you some questions here.
Okay.
So this is 8 seconds left, and I am screen sharing for those of you watching on YouTube. This is 8 seconds left in the third quarter. Golden State Valkyries, the 8 seed, playing the number 1 seed, are up 11 points with 8 seconds left in the third quarter. I'm going to put the volume on for this. And this is the possession that ended the third quarter. Here you go. And one for the underdog lower seed Valkyries. There's high energy. Teams are pumped. They are pumped up, right? So given that, where we're ending the third quarter, which team, so for those of you listening to audio, Minnesota is now up 62-49. If she makes the free throw, they're going to be up 63-49. Going into the fourth quarter, all the momentum, home crowd for the Valkyries going nuts in there. Mark, who do you think wins this game?
I mean, I would have to say Golden State, right?
You would have to say Golden State. In fact, I was watching this game live, and I'm like, Golden State is playing awesome. They're going to win this game. Spoiler alert, wrong. They ended up losing this game. The Lynx went on a massive run in the fourth quarter and ended up winning this game. So the question is why? And I would say it is poor end game management. So as we do go through a couple of clips here in the fourth quarter of how Minnesota ended up winning this game, let me ask you another question, Mark. Do you think that Minnesota, without having watched it and just knowing basketball, do you think Minnesota ended up winning this game or Golden State ended up losing this game?
I think more games are lost than won. So I'll say
even at the professional level, and probably, you know, like less so at the professional, but absolutely right. I mean, yeah, Minnesota did some good things. So without watching this game again, Mark, because I really just want to frame this, what are a couple of, and then I'll chime in with some, what are a couple of the most common mistakes made by a team that is up at the end that loses a lead and loses a game? Why does that happen, would you say?
I would say letting their foot off the gas a little bit too early, like playing not to lose instead of playing the win. I think in a bat, like fouling, I think that's one of those things where you get the other team in the bonus early and you're like, oh gosh, this is going to be really tough to go the rest of the way without fouling. Maybe take poor shots and mention fouls. Maybe just they lose an important player.
Yeah. Agreed. Here's two more. They stop doing what got them there. Like, okay, so we did all these things to establish this lead. Now that we have this lead, we have to completely change the way we're playing to protect this lead. I'd say that is the number one reason why teams lose games when they're up, especially with like significant time left, like a full quarter in the game. Stop doing what got them there would be number one. And I think the other thing, and this is what I tell our teams all the time when we're up, is rebound and no threes. teams make comebacks by getting offensive rebounds, extra possessions, and making threes. That's it. If we can just defensive rebound and not let them make threes, we will win this game when we're up at the end. And here is how, it's pretty funny. Here is actually how the losing team started the fourth quarter. And again, like, you'll see the possession here. This is the losing team, but the number one seed, Minnesota. Early possession. Okay. Oh, sorry. That was the drive to the rim. The very next possession is an offensive rebound. The very next possession is a wide open made three. You'll see this one right here. So it's just offensive rebounds and threes, offensive rebounds and threes, like over and over and over again. And then all of a sudden, you start to get tight when you give up offensive rebounds and threes. All right. So, Mark, we talked about how you should play when you're up at the end of the game. Let's give a couple of thoughts on how a team should play when they're down at the end of the game.
Yeah, I would say I'll give you one offense, one defense. On offense, attack the rack. Just like relentlessly, like get paint touches, play really aggressive, get to the free throw line, put a lot of pressure on the defense. And defensively, get more aggressive, like especially on the ball. Like let's apply more ball pressure. Let's try to get more steals. Because I think at times, like, you know, you go through that, like, all right, if we keep doing what we're doing, like we're losing. So if we keep doing what we're doing, we're probably going to lose the game. So we got to make some type of adjustment. I think an easy one, just get more aggressive on both ends of the floor.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to go back and emphasize like the offensive aggression when you're down at the end of the game. The opposing team does not want to foul. They do not want to foul. And so you're actually going to get easier finishes. Referees are human beings. And at all levels, they just tend subconsciously to give the team that's losing a little bit kinder whistle. So like be super aggressive, like initiate contact, attack. Because even as we talk about like we want nines first and seven second, the more you attack and collapse the defense, the more it's actually going to open up threes. The most common mistake when you're down at the end of the game is to just try to shoot threes without hunting nines first. Like, oh, we're down. We need a three, not a two. So we don't crack the shell. We don't collapse the defense. And we just take an off the dribble three. You get your threes by attacking the rack.
Yeah. And not only that, whenever the team is up, they tend to lose the game by not doing what got them there. So they're going to stop pushing the pace, which means you can crash the glass even more. So, So get aggressive in that phase of rebounding as well. Like, hey, obviously, we have to get defensive stops and rebounds, but offensively, like you relentlessly go be ultra aggressive because you know they're going to rebound, they're going to grab it, they're going to turtle it, they're going to get it to their racker or point guard who's going to walk it up. So you got time to get back.
Yeah, and the only other thing that I would add is you actually want to play in transition even more. You know, we all know in our RDS offensive system that we want to play in transition. But we want to play in transition even more. Mark, I think you can actually switch to the screen present mode here. Here's a great example of that. And it's how one of the things that Minnesota did so well to come back is they just pushed even harder in transition. When you play in transition, you have a bigger advantage. You're able to get to the rim. And they just did this over and over and over again. They played faster than they did at any other time in the game. So when you're down, you want to actually double down on playing really fast in transition.
Tyler, here's a question for you. When do you have an underlying philosophy or a compass that are default that you get to as far as when to call a timeout to set up your defense, whenever you're transitioning the defense, or when do you call a timeout to maybe get your team organized? Let's make sure we're deciding who and where from versus letting your team play in transition. Let's assume it's like last possession or, you know, last couple possessions of the game.
Goodness, specific to defense.
You can take it either way. You can be the defensive team. Do I call a timeout, or I'm transitioning to offense? Do I call a timeout?
Yeah. So let me actually start with offense. And I think that we can really explore the opposite game here as well. Offense, very, very reluctant to ever call a timeout and set it up. Offense, I want them to play in transition and play in flow as much as possible. The only time I'd call a timeout to set something up offensively is if we have a very short clock and it looks like we do not have an advantage. Otherwise, I'll let them try to create the advantage organically. What's a short clock mean? It means let's say we're neutral with 5 seconds left on shot or game clock. 8 seconds left on shot or game clock and we're completely neutral, then I might call a timeout. But if it's in transition, I'll never call a timeout. And if we have, 20, 30 seconds on shot or game clock, I'll let them try to create the advantage on their own. On the flip side, if we have a chance defensively, to set our defense, I prefer to do it through fouling, right? But if we're disorganized defensively, or we want to try to change something up, I'm a big fan of a defensive timeout, because generally the offense is going to draw something up for your expected defense. And I would drastically change what we're doing defensively coming out of a timeout on defense. So let's say we've been playing man all game long, and the offense calls a timeout, or we need to call a timeout for substitutions to get our defensive, best defenders in the game, which I do think is really valuable. Then we'll probably change it up to maybe like our 1-3-1 or a 2-3, or we might change up our coverage. The best ball screen defense, I believe, is changing ball screen defense. Like, anybody can get used to it. And if you just kind of extrapolate that out, I think the best in-game defense is a changing in-game defense. So that'd be my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think too, like, who are you going to sub in? I'm thinking rebounder, like your best rebounder, because usually games are won and lost on those offensive rebound putbacks. But also, it doesn't matter what the coach is drawing up, especially if you're changing defense. The game is probably going to go into something unscripted, like best player, ball in their hands, middle third. So sub in your best on ball defender, because you can do everything right. You could switch this screen, you could blow up that ball screen, and then when their best dude or dudette has the ball in the middle of the floor, you're like in a helpless field, and you're like, oh no. Mm-hmm. So put your best on ball defender in there, or if you got multiple, good for you.
Okay, here's a quick question for you. What is more valuable if you're like doing subs for end of game? Is it more valuable to get your offensive players in for in-game substitutions, or more valuable to get your best defensive players in on defense if you can't do both, right? End of game, like, what do you want? You want your best offensive players in or best defensive players in, knowing that you might get two or three possessions without being able to change them out?
We're assuming like tie game here, I guess.
Ooh, okay. Let's do it both ways. All right, offense or defensive skill when you're down?
Offense.
Offense or defense skill when you're up?
I guess I got to go defense.
Exactly. I think I would as well. That's an interest. I would agree with that 100%. Offense or defensive skill when you're tied?
Give me offense.
Same. Okay. So there it is. Coaches, you probably got to know your answers there as well. So you're not in the moment like, who do I put in? You already know. Like, reaction tends to lead to poor decisions, where preparation tends to lead to at least a more thoughtful decision. So I think like this is why we're doing these episodes, to help you think, maybe take some of our ideas, but if you at least have thought about your decisions and you've got a plan, then you can live with whatever happens. But if you're just reacting in the moment, don't have a plan, that's going to lead to a lot of regret.
Yeah. And we kind of went through the test and teach a little bit on this podcast. Like, we're testing our beliefs right now, which is good, because you're going to think about them differently. And then even if you do have that plan, you got to go get on the court and actually teach it, because that is going to change, because you're going to be in that situation with a lot of pressure. You're not going to have 5 minutes to make those decisions. You might have a 30-second timeout where you're going to have to give your players the instruction and all that. Oh, here's a pro tip that we will leave you on. When you're drawing things up on the whiteboard, it should be something that you've practiced, but use different color markers. Maybe like use blue for offense and red for defense, or blue for the screeners and red for the cutters. If you can do that, it just helps players visualize what you're drawing on the board. Because I've seen some whiteboards after I'm done with them, it just looks like a whole bunch of scribbles,
whole bunch of black lines.
Yeah. So that's not helpful for anybody. So, all right, coaches. This was fun. Hope you got something out of it. Let us know what special situations you're going to practice, and don't forget to stay savvy.
Stay savvy.